Hey guys. Hello. How are you?
Hello.
Super. Hey, Phil.
How's the world around you?
Good.
Good? Okay. Anyone else?
Hello.
Hey, Tony.
I have to say a lot of my clients have been stressed out this week, but I'm keeping it good.
Have been stressed out?
Yes.
Just because of the world or because of COVID or something specific or?
I don't know. I just, a lot of it's mom stress, work stress. Yeah, probably a combination. I think it's just heavy.
Yeah. Heather, can you talk briefly about what you said in your video in the Alive Across America about your mom feeling your energy and the nurse feeling your energy? Can you just share a little piece of that?
Oh, yeah. If you didn't see the video, I talked about how on Wednesday I had to take my mom for a blood transfusion. It's something that we, you know, she's been on dialysis for almost 12 years now. And so it's just something that we have to do from time to time. But Wednesday was just a very, it was just an unexpected turn of events and some miscommunications and there was a lot of frustration on my part going into that. And then they were running late at the clinic, and it's a long process anyway. And so it made me late for a number of things. And I was very frustrated, and my mom was feeling my frustration and was getting very agitated, and the nurse was feeling my frustration. But then when I refocused and realized that everybody was reacting to my energy, I knew that I had to change my energy. So took a few deep breaths and was just focusing on being grateful. And, you know, within a very short period of time, about 5 minutes, everything changed. The environment, everything changed. Everything was calm, cool, collected. Things were going much smoother than they had been before. And it was just a very strong reminder to me that my energy has an effect on everybody around me.
So I've developed this sort of a metaphysical understanding of certain things, and I use the word often with myself, orbit. I realize that I can have a very strong orbit, but when I'm in chaos or distress, it becomes fragmented. And what I mean by orbit is it's an energy that surrounds me, but it's impacting everybody I pass, everybody I come in contact with. And if my orbit is strong, they're impacted in a positive way by it. But if my orbit is disrupted, then I'm vulnerable to all of those other energies. So, Heather, does that make sense to you?
Yes.
So,
so much
using that language, you had a stronger orbit than your mom and the nurse, right?
Undoubtedly.
So when you go into this negative spin, you don't have to even say anything, but they're following along. They're moving with you like satellites, right? They don't even know they're doing it, but they're doing it because they fall into your orbit. So you also said in that video, I think you said, did you ever walk into a room and you feel like somebody had a fight in there, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Well, that is real. You know, you could feel negativity. Now, not everybody's as energy sensitive as people who are very energy sensitive, but we develop it because I wasn't. But I've developed it. And when my daughter was young, I learned a lot from her because she just had it innately. You know, we'd sometimes walk into a place and she would just want to leave for no reason. And later she told me because the energy wasn't good. Like when she was 2 years old, 3 years old, she didn't have a language for it. I think you guys know I was in the process of building a medical fitness center with Dr. Blyweiss, a few other people, and the owner of the building was a man named Hormel, who owns Hormel Meats. And Dr. Blyweiss had, in essence, saved Mr. Hormel's life, and Mr. Hormel used a lot of hyperbaric oxygen to get well. So he wanted to do something altruistically. He owned this building, and he said the first floor of the building is going to be a hyperbaric center for autistic people, not only children, and for vets who suffer from brain injuries or PTSD. It was a four-story building, so we had the other three floors. And it was really exciting, and it's a prime space. And we spent about 8 months refining and developing space, meeting with architects. We had all the framing done. There was construction going on, and you guys may know this whole story. But Dr. Bleiweiss and Joe, one of the financial partners, started bickering. And Joe would call me at night, and he'd go, I know Dr. Bleiweiss is your friend, but, and I go, Joe, I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me this, but you need to know who you're getting into business with. I said, yeah, but then say it in front of him. Like, let's do it all in meetings. Meanwhile, Hormel, who had, I think, a 30-year-old girlfriend, and he was about 90, his children worked to declare him incompetent so that they could take over the business because they didn't want him doing anything altruistic. They wanted to sell this and lease it and maybe make money on just selling the building. So one of the last meetings I went to, now keep in mind, we're about 3 months away from completion. Like, this was a real deal. And I went to this meeting, and it was an investors meeting, and we're just talking about what still has to be done. And there's arguing, and Joe is rolling his eyes when Dr. Bleiweiss says something. And I literally push my chair back, and I said, guys, I'm leaving. And they go, well, you can't leave. I go, no, I'm leaving the project. And they, like, stared at me, and I said, you can't build a healing center on negative energy. And I meant it. Like, I felt like this is going to carry forward. Like, this whole building is going to be filled with this negativity. So in that moment, they were all very angry at me. Well, today, none of them talk to each other anymore, but I'm still friends with them. So I think it was the right move. But it's an example of that heaviness, that energy. So, Heather, can you understand that move on my part?
Oh, I can, and I applaud you for it.
Yeah. So I think now what's happening in the nation, in the world, in the neighborhoods, it's just that heavy energy. So, Tammy, it's not just your clients and not your people. Like, if you look for it, it's there. And if your orbit's not strong enough, it affects you. And that's why it's really important that you take time every morning before you walk out into the world to get centered. And centered is a really, really good word. We could use it in martial arts. We could use it in Qigong. We could use it in many, many, many disciplines, including Indian cultures. We can use it with the metaphor of a compass. You know, we want to be in center. But that's what happened to our country right now. We've lost our center. There is no center. Everybody's on one side or the other, or closer to one side than another, and it is completely and totally insane. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day who is anti-vaccines. And he told me that when he got his first vaccine, he developed a heart flutter. And I was surprised because I thought he was anti-vaccines. And I said, well, why did you get the first one? He goes, well, I was under a lot of pressure. And, you know, my wife is in healthcare, and I just felt like I needed to get it. So, okay, he got it, and then he had a heart flutter. And then he got the second vaccine. And 3 days later, he was riding his bike, which he hadn't done since he got the first vaccine, and he felt a burning pain in his chest, and he had to stop. And he went to the doctor, he went to a cardiologist, and they did all kinds of tests. And the cardiologist said, well, I don't really see anything serious. You know, come back in a month. We're going to have you wear a Holter monitor. And he said, but doctor, don't you think it has something to do with the vaccine? And the doctor said, no, it has nothing to do with the vaccine. So I was kind of confused because he told me he's anti-vaccine, yet he had the vaccine. But now maybe he's regretting it and he's second-guessing it. Well, here's what got me. He's going for his booster. Now, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying people are literally polarized with themselves. I mean, it's really crazy. There is no center. And what I said, Tim, is, Whatever the doctor believes, if you get like bit by a mosquito and the next day your eye swells up, you got to at least suspect it had something to do with the mosquito. You don't know for sure. But if you never had a heart flutter and it happened the day after the vaccine, it doesn't mean the vaccine is bad. It doesn't mean the vaccine is killing people. But for a doctor not to consider that, I believe, is professionally irresponsible. But the doctor is so far to one side going, vaccines are good, they can't hurt anybody. So I'm, you know, I'm walking around going, can I find somebody else in center here? I try very hard to keep my staff in center. I steer them away from having conversations about anything controversial with any members. They could listen, but do not speak. Like, seriously, you got to try to stay in center. And when people go, well, don't you think, you know, I do have personal opinions. When I look at everything, and I try to look at everything I know about this virus today, and people go, do you think it was man-made? Between you guys and me, I do. I do. But do I know? I don't know. Do I know enough to stand in front of somebody and go, this was definitely – no. So why would I open my mouth? Like, what good will it do? How will my opinion being voiced on that help the world around me? It won't. It just creates angst and anger. I shared with you guys the polarization that came at me when I sent out that innocuous email. You know, I mentioned that I did ivermectin, and oh, the attacks that I got were crazy, but also the applause that I got was crazy. And I'm thinking everybody lost their center. So we have to do two things. One, not get caught up in being pulled to one side or the other, and that's not always easy. It's not, because we're human, we have emotions. But as Heather did, she returned to center, right? And isn't that kind of a fair assessment of what gratitude does? Is it brings you back to center. It brings you away from the extreme reaction, the neurotransmission that's taking you into anger or disgust. Really, gratitude brings you back to center, right? I'm asking you, Heather. I just want to make sure I'm aligned with you. Okay.
Yes.
And when we talk about homeostasis, we're talking about center, right? You go through like adrenal overload, adrenal stress. You run, you play, you fight, you work out, and then you come back into center. And in center, your blood sugar is balanced. You're adequately hydrated, so your water is in balance. Your sodium is in balance. You're in center. We've lost it. We've lost it as a community. We've lost it as a society. So this becomes our power. It's going to take work. But being centered becomes our power. I have a centering exercise that I learned from somebody who's very evolved. And it's powerful. And it, when you do this, you know there's something more than we can see or discover with our senses. There's something more. It's almost a little scary for people when they do it the first time. But getting to that place of center just gives you a sense of awe. And when we're not in center, we are so caught up in whatever is attracting our senses at that moment in time, we do things impulsively and many times foolishly. And then we don't let our ego acknowledge that we were foolish or wrong, so we stick and we hold and we stay tight and we seek out other people who will commiserate with us and agree with us, even if deep down somewhere we know what we're saying is crazy. That's the insanity of what's going on today. I see it everywhere. I just hung up from a medical roundtable. It's actually a webinar. But man, everybody was arguing. I was stating what I believe to be a point of fact, that the medical system cannot go back to where it was. I gave 15 reasons why. Now, if I'm wrong, and that's what they want, if they want it to go back, good. But do they want it to go back? Like, when Obamacare became a thing, doctors were unhappy because they had to upgrade their software and use different codes, and they made less money. And now they're going, well, we want it to go back. Why do you want it to go back? You know why? Because what's in front of them is unknown. And because most of them are not entrepreneurs, they're afraid. They're afraid of the unknown. That's what we're dealing with. Guys, I kind of like the unknown, but I'm going to tell you why. Because I have a really strong prefrontal cortex. Not everybody does. And you know that we have the ability to develop our prefrontal cortex, but you meet a lot of people who are just stuck. You understand when the EEM becomes too restrictive, how people will say things like, I can't, I can't, I can't, I'd like to, but? Because I'm aware of that, and I'm aware of my monsters, and I exercise my PFC, and I journal, and I do future memories, I've got some really good wiring going to that brain center. So the unknown for me is a blank slate. Like when I'm before the unknown, I'm going, okay, let me create whatever I want to create. But most people, especially if they're tied to their PFC, if they go, all the things I'm used to are gone, now what? They experience fear. And what is fear? Fight or flight, adrenal overload, sympathetic response. That's what we're dealing with. And that's the orbit that we have to insulate ourselves from. So Tammy, does that make sense to you? Like, does it take what you said about your clients being stressed just to a different place of understanding for you?
Yes. I try to keep the energy up and, you know, so that my good energy is rubbing off on them and it works. And then that coupled with the workout and the positive mindset, I feel like they left better off. So,
yep.
No, I think a lot of that, like what you're talking about, to come to higher consciousness. And a lot of people don't have that because their pineal gland calcified. So
right.
I think it's for some people, like on the upper, like when you're talking, I know EEM and your prefrontal cortex, I'm talking more like higher consciousness. So.
Yeah, well, we can have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Depending what culture or discipline you come from, in Kabbalah, there are four worlds, and we're only in the lower world. Or if you look at the Tree of Life, there are 10 spheres, and we're only in the lower spheres, physically. But as we become evolved, we go higher, and we can maybe access the astral plane, and we can get in the place of knowledge or the place of universal knowledge. And if we read the works of Carl Jung, we'll find out that there's a subconscious or an unconscious that we all share. So I agree with you. Most people have no concept of what I'm talking about. Forget about which name we give it. They don't understand this idea of elevating or ascending beyond what is physical and in front of you.
Right.
I don't know that it's our job to teach them that, but I do believe we can guide them forward. But what's most important, because it's not your job, Tammy, to bring everybody to that place, what's most important
right.
is that you insulate from it, that you protect yourself from it. Because I'm sure you've had times where a client made you so upset, 24 hours it took you to recover, right? Just in your life, that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to recognize what's going on, and we just have to kind of be forgiving of what people say, but we can't let them pull us into their orbit. Can anybody else relate to what I'm saying? Because I know some of this sounds a little abstract, but to me this is 100% real, and even though it's not all tangible, it's absolutely real, at least to me.
It's not abstract at all.
So people do what they do either because their EEM holds them. So somebody who gets up at 6 o'clock every single day, has a cup of coffee and a donut, reads the newspaper, if anybody still reads the newspaper, drives to work, shows up, says hello to the same people, sits at the same desk. They're so locked into their life that their EEM rules. Their EEM runs it. Their reticular activating system is completely controlled by the EEM. It's like, don't look outside of this box because it's scary out there. So those people will do what they do because they're stuck in doing what they've done. So people do what they do either because of the restriction of the EEM, which has them wired to repetition, or because the PFC gives them a sense of what might happen. And I'm asking you guys to recognize that and stay very connected to your PFC. Don't let somebody pull you into that place of fear. Really, there's nothing to fear. You know, the only thing to fear is fear itself. I mean, if somebody runs out of nowhere and kisses you and they go, I have COVID, okay, then maybe you could be a little fearful for a moment, but that doesn't usually happen. So whether or not you choose to wear a mask, don't fear. Don't walk around in panic. Don't lecture other people. Do what you do because your PFC guides you. Think of the best outcome, and that's what you should do. Now, some people who have a very strong PFC decide that, you know, all the money in the bank, I think I could get that. So Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid decided to go to Bolivia when they were in trouble in the United States and rob banks, if anybody ever saw that movie. That's a PFC. It's like, oh, yeah, well, we could just go to Bolivia and rob banks there. Okay, that's a good idea. Now, people who have an EEM that's strong would go, are you crazy? First of all, why would I go to Bolivia? And second of all, why would I rob a bank? I mean, that's a criminal. But no, they had a really strong PFC. So not everybody who has a strong PFC is altruistic. Sometimes people go, yeah, I can make a lot of money selling cocaine. That's PFC. I mean, I would think the head of every drug cartel has a strong PFC. Because they see grandeur. They go, I could own the entire East Coast and Mexico, and why not the world? So when somebody gets a taste of the power of an infomercial, and they have a fair and reasonable product, and then the product kind of runs its course, they kind of forget about the importance of something being ethical, and they go, I need a new product, and they come up with something, and if it's scammy but people will buy it, great. And that's what happened to the infomercial industry. It got polluted and corrupted. So when I look at the stories that are going on around me, when I look at the violations that are taking place, when I dig deep into, you know, ivermectin is a big one for me because I really have a lot of elements of my decision to take it. This was not random by any means. But when somebody wants to attack me because I did something stupid or dangerous or because I'm telling the rest of the world to take horse injections, they're not speaking from a place of common sense. They're speaking from a place of anger. They have no idea what they're even talking about, but that is the reaction. So I look and I see people making decisions, but I also see, and I spoke to you guys a couple of weeks ago about, you know, all the fraud that's on the labels of the products that are sold, the health and weight loss products that are sold in Target and CVS. And now most of them lie. 85% had clear lies in their claims on the label. But they sell, and it's acceptable. So how far is it to then sell a fraudulent product? How much of a leap is it to say it has 23 grams of protein and not put in protein? Well, Elias Suarez has been arrested on a felony count of acting as a medical practitioner without a license. Now, here's why he did it. Because he heard Donald Trump say something about bleach. Does anybody vaguely remember that? Now, regardless of where you stand on Trump, we all really know he didn't say everyone should drink bleach. That's not what he said. He didn't tell people to chug Lysol or Clorox. He didn't say that. But he did have a moment where he opened up a thought. And he's in front of an audience, which is a pretty significant audience, and he goes, oh, well, kind of works to kill germs on the outside. Maybe if we get it on the inside. Well, Elias Suarez saw opportunity there because he knows that what he cleans his pool with is something called chlorine dioxide, which is kind of like bleach. But he also knows that if, like, he gets pool water in his mouth, he doesn't die. So what if he dilutes it and holds himself up as somebody who can protect people from COVID? Now, he couldn't call it pool cleaner, so he had to give it a name. So here's the name he gave it: Miracle Mineral Solution. And when he found that people were willing to buy it, for $200 a pop. They would come to him. He would do an assessment. He started to see another market. He found out that there are a lot of children who are autistic. And he said, I'm going to start to experiment and see if my miracle mineral solution can sell to parents of children who are autistic. And he did. And he had a business going, selling chlorine dioxide as a cure for COVID and autism. That's a strong PFC, but I don't know if it's grounded in ethics. But you see what happens is somebody sees opportunity. They see that some people are hearing Donald Trump and they're going, hey, I think I want to eat some bleach because that'll save me from COVID. So he goes, okay, well, suddenly there's a demand. I'm going to supply it. Really, that's a sign of an entrepreneur. They see an opportunity. There's a whole movement of mostly chiropractors and naturopaths, and I would ask any of you guys to share any thoughts you have on this. But they're doing fecal transplants. Is anybody familiar with that?
Yeah. I had a client who had a child who was extremely sick. Unfortunately, he eventually passed away, and they were doing that as a means. He had a C. diff, and they were doing it to his treat that.
Say it again. I didn't hear the last part. You said, unfortunately,
he
passed
had,
away. He had a?
He had C. diff.
Okay, for some reason, you're still cutting out. But go ahead.
He said C. diff.
Okay.
He had C. diff.
Okay.
And they were using that as a means of treating him.
Do you know the mechanism of what they did, like how they got somebody else's fecal matter into his body?
I know it had to be extracted from his sister, but if I recall correctly, like she had to give a sample, and then they had to implement it like almost like a turkey baster and through his anus.
So the easy way to do this is to, forgive me for the simplicity of what I'm about to say, eat shit. That's what it is. And the idea is eat infant shit because they have a good, healthy microbiome. They haven't screwed it up yet. So there's an entire movement of chiropractors and naturopaths who are selling fecal transplants. Now, what they sell are capsules, but they're empty. Like, you make the capsules yourself. They're just shells or capsule shells. And they give you the turkey baster scoop mechanism, and they tell you how to do it. But the only thing you need is an infant and some of the infant's poop. Now, guys, I got to tell you, you can share science with me, and you can pull things out and go, well, look at this, because if they have this bacteria. But I would like to see a single case of somebody who ate a baby shit and got healthy or overcame a disease. So, listen, I'm open-minded. But I'm also really skeptical. And these guys get so caught up, and I know them, by the way, but they get so caught up in what they do that they start to believe things without anything to support the belief. One of these guys, I don't want to name his name, got fined a lot of money and did some jail time. But the reason that he went to jail, not for making people eat shit, because he claimed that this would cure autism. So I'm saying this too is a vulnerable market. You look at people who have children who, whether or not it was after a vaccine, are autistic, they'll do anything, honestly. So if you're just in the business of making money and you're looking for a vulnerable market, the weight loss market is one, for sure. COVID market is a big one. The autism market is another big one. What I shared with you a few weeks ago is if people are willing to go this far to lie or to stretch the truth or to take an opportunity and turn it into something fraudulent, how do we market with the truth? And this brought up the question, do you have to stretch the truth? Do you have to lie to market well? And I say no. I will stand behind this no. I will say absolutely not. Does it frustrate me that people can lie and others will believe them? Yes. Is it frustrating that people are so polarized they can't find the center? Yeah. But that doesn't mean we let go of it and go to one of those two sides. I think ultimately your standing is in truth. Your grounding is in center. Your strength is staying in center. And if you maintain a strong orbit, your people will follow you. And those who aren't yet will come around. But we've got to be strong enough not to fall prey to all of those energies that are pulling us away from center. Any thoughts about any of this? Tammy, Heather, Tony, Troy? Like, is this resonating? And you guys going, yeah, this is true. Or, you know, I said earlier it might sound too abstract, and Tony, you said, no, it's not abstract. But most people wouldn't sit and listen to this because they'd go, you're wrong. Whichever side they're on, I'm wrong because I'm not on the side, right?
No, it's resonating with me.
In Ohio, at Westchester Hospital, the county judge ordered a hospital to give a patient ivermectin. Now, here's something else. It's just kind of EEM. I worked with hospitals and I stopped because I couldn't stand the bureaucracy. Like when you get into the back offices, nobody's talking about making people well. Everyone's protecting their own ass and trying to make money, honestly. And the doctors hate the administrators, and the administrators hate the doctors. And as I said earlier, it's hard to build a healing center on bad energy. And while I can't speak for every hospital, some of the hospitals, and by the way, it does not apply to Johns Hopkins, not at all. But some of the other hospitals I've worked with, there was that dark fighting energy, hatred, backstabbing, department against department. So in this bureaucracy, they have very clear rules, and they have protocol, and people fear violating protocol because they don't want to lose their job. So, you know, you've all seen shows or movies where, like, the nurse turns her back to allow something that shouldn't happen. And I think that's human. I do. But the bureaucracy is so strong that people in that environment become robotic, and they operate based on their EEM. So I'm going to tell you a horribly sad story, but I have an employee, and her name is Rebecca, and she had a beautiful son, a year and a half old, and he fell in the pool, and he drowned. And he was alive, but not functional. So, you know, rushed him to Broward General Hospital and had him all hooked up. And my partner, Kristen, is a stem cell scientist. And she said, let's get stem cells into him. What's the harm? You know, they're just keeping him alive with machines, but what if we can start to get his brain to regenerate? Let's get some stem cells into him. So, and this was during COVID, kind of lockdown, and she went to the bank and she got some stem cells and she drove to the hospital and people had to turn their backs and she had to sneak in, and then the administration said, no, can't do it. There's another person, a doctor, and by the way, unfortunately, he passed away. He died. And I'm not saying the stem cells would have saved him, but I'm just saying in that circumstance, why not go PFC? I understand that at extremes it can be radical, but under certain conditions. There was a doctor in Colorado, was on a ventilator. He was a regenerative medicine doctor and wanted to, his family said, let's get stem cells in him. That's what he would do for other people. The hospital wouldn't allow it. Controversial. When somebody's at risk of death, I don't know. Let's do something controversial. So this is why it baffles me that people are so opinionated about ivermectin. I think it helped me. Now, I don't know. I did a lot of things, and I think I did a lot of things right. And did all of them help me? I don't know. I just know I only had one bad day of COVID. That's it. what's kind of ironic is same time as me, Joe Rogan got COVID, and he did the same exact thing as me. I didn't know what he was doing, but I heard him talk about same exact thing. The monoclonal antibodies, the ivermectin, vitamin C infusions, glutathione. Because we study and we understand possibility, and do we know it to be fact? No, we don't. But we look at what we know and we make our best guess using our PFC to think of the outcome that we want. So if a doctor prescribed ivermectin for a patient who was in the hospital and the hospital refused to let the patient take the drug that his doctor prescribed, that needed to go to court. And the court said, give him the drug. His doctor prescribed it. But this confuses things even more. Because what about the boundaries? What about the rules of the hospital? We don't give people any unapproved drugs. So I want you guys to understand that this is not coming back. You know, this is where I just came from in this roundtable. It's not going back. It is too fucking crazy, honestly. And when they go going back, they don't even know what they wanted to go back to. I mean, insurance, drug companies, the whole thing is chaotic and has been chaotic. This just revealed the weakness of it, the fragility of the entire medical system. I'm going to tell you just a little of just what I know about ivermectin, only because it's one of those things that people keep attacking me for. You took ivermectin. How could you?
Didn't it win a Nobel Peace Prize in 2015?
Tammy got star six. Tammy?
Yes.
Star six.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I thought I heard you talking. I thought I heard somebody talking in the background.
No, I was talking to you.
Oh, what were you saying?
I said, ivermectin won a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, exactly right.
2015.
Yeah.
So you got to do your research.
Yeah. So ivermectin is a very powerful veterinary drug that causes a horrible release of parasites from horses and cows. But if your horses and cows have parasites, let them have a few days of really bad diarrhea, and then they'll be healthy. Honestly, that's what the drug does. So I do have some veterinary ivermectin, not because I was taking it, because somebody sent it to me. So I do actually have a bottle of injectable ivermectin. That's not what I did. I went to a doctor who prescribed it, and I went to a pharmacist who I revere, who spoke to me at length about it and said, the truth is, this is approved to remove parasites from humans. Now, you don't take a veterinary dosage. It'll be very unpleasant, maybe dangerous. But it is approved. This is not an unapproved drug. But it appears that that same mechanism that removes parasites from the cell goes into the cell and does something. And what it appears to do with COVID, it doesn't cure COVID. It doesn't get rid of symptoms of COVID. It stops the cells from replicating the virus. Now, in my case, it makes sense. Because why did mine not get worse? I mean, most people go through that first day and then the second and the third and the fourth and the second week and 10 days. Something stopped the replication. So I don't know for sure, but it makes sense. But what I don't understand is why the attacks. Why don't people go, well, tell me why you chose to use it. Tell me what you know about it. Well, you only had one bad day. Maybe what I heard about ivermectin isn't true. But that's not where people are at because they're not thinking rationally. They're purely polarized and stuck in a corner. So I believe that there is power in truth in a field of lies and confusion. I do. But I think there is a second part of that statement. I think there's power in truth when you can prove it to be true. You can't prove ivermectin to do what it does because it prevents something that didn't happen. So how do you really prove that? But if you can, then most people would at least shut up. So it doesn't kill the virus, and that's where people are stuck. They go, no, no, you got to kill the virus. No, you just have to stop it from replicating, and then your immune system does what it's supposed to do. And if you bolster your immune system with vitamin C and glutathione, then it does it even better. It makes sense to me. But is it provable? No. So here's the truth that I'm really comfortable speaking every single day. I can deliver the innate healing power that works to reverse type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and hypothyroidism. And if you have REMAS, which we can determine very quickly, I can promise you it is reversible. That's my truth. I have evidence. A lot. So I will stand in that. So I'm not standing in front of somebody going, I will cure your diabetes. I can't make that claim. And I'm also not taking credit because I'm recognizing that it is, in fact, an innate power. It comes from somewhere much higher than me. But we're born with the power to heal. We're born with the power to regenerate. I mean, wherever it was that you cut yourself, look at that place now, it healed. But when somebody gets diabetes and they get a wound, they don't heal anymore because they've disrupted that innate power. So while I can't promise I will cure your disease, I can promise that I can deliver the innate healing power that works to reverse type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and hypothyroidism. And if you have REMAS, I can promise you it's reversible. You guys comfortable with that? Does anybody take issue with that? Because I'm saying it as if it's a fact. Tony, do you accept that as a fact?
Yes, I do.
I do.
Heather?
Yes, I do.
Troy?
Yep.
Did Tasso make it in? I know he's unloading his bike.
Yeah, he's off bike.
Well, this is a strong promise. This is a really strong promise. And it comes out of months of refining what I say. But I also realize, because it is a truth in a field of lies and misinformation, people don't recognize it as a truth. Like, maybe you're just trying to sell me some shit. Maybe this is chlorine in a different form. So how do people know? But I just feel like if you stand in truth, sooner or later they will know. But here's what's important. They don't just accept. And you guys have to be okay with that. I'm okay with it. So when I say to somebody, I can deliver the innate power that will reverse your type 2 diabetes, and they say to me, my doctor said, I'm prepared now. I don't get offended when they go, my doctor said it's not curable. I'm completely prepared. And what I thought of when I was kind of structuring this is when I was a kid, I busted up my leg in fourth grade. I tore all of the ligaments and tendons, and I was in a hospital in traction playing football. And for a while, I was home, and my friends would come over, and we would play, like, board games. And one of my games was Strat-O-Matic baseball. We didn't have any technology, so it was just this manual game where you'd roll the dice, and you had your team and all your players, and you could trade. And then there was another game called Stratego. And Stratego was two armies, and you had these little pieces, and you'd set up, and you would try to capture the other person's flag. And it was a strategy game. And it was a great game, and because I played it so much, I got really good at the strategy. And there were two people who I would play with, and one of them was Richie. Richie was my friend who lived down the hall. So he'd come over, and we'd play, and it was always a good game. It was always competitive. You know, like, oh, man, I thought that was a bomb. Oh, man, I can't believe that's not your flag. I thought I had it figured out. Oh, my God, that's your one? You know, it was just really intense, and we really enjoyed it. But after that, I would try to play the game with people, and they couldn't compete. Like, I'd beat them in 3 minutes. Because they didn't have the strategy. So I believe for me, I've been through it so many times, I'm liking the strategy. I think of it like a game. You know, and then I got really good at Stratego, so I thought, now I'll get really good at chess. And I thought I did until I played somebody who kicked my ass. And I was like, oh, I got to learn more. And then I got better, and then I played somebody who schooled me. So I like the strategy, and I like, you know, in times of uncertainty, thinking of the possibility. What could I do to get better? So this comes to where I am right now, is I will make that statement. I can deliver the innate healing power that works to reverse type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and hypothyroidism. And if you have REMAS, I can promise you it is reversible. But they don't just lay down and go, okay. They don't go, here's my credit card. So I realize it's kind of like, I'm going to make my statement, I'm going to state my truth, and then it's your move. And then they make a move, and now I have to make a strategy move. And because I've learned to love it, because I formed that association in my mind, I don't get angry. Like, I used to get annoyed with people. I know Roy Franks in my true group, he gets so annoyed with people because they say things that are not rational. You know, and they say things like, well, first I got to lose weight, then I'll start to train. And you go, what? I don't get annoyed anymore. I mean, I'm sure I have a threshold, but I just see it as a game. Let's sit down and play. So I can deliver the innate healing power, and they go, my doctor said it's not curable. Strategy. It's now a chess game. But the beauty of this chess game is we both win. There's no loser. I feel like I lose if they say no, but the unfortunate thing is they lost also. So that makes me more determined to roll this forward until they go, yeah, it makes sense. Yes, I'll give it a try. Or even it doesn't make sense, but I'll give it a try. They'll say things like, no, but I need my medication. How do you know that? Well, my doctor said. Now, I've learned in this chess match, you don't ever say the doctor is wrong. You never say the doctor is wrong. In fact, you agree. You agree that the doctor said it. That's the power, because it doesn't raise their defense. My doctor said I'll need to take this medication forever, and I go, okay, I believe you that your doctor said that. No guard comes up. If I go, oh, your doctor's wrong, then they get defensive. Because they love their doctor in this moment. They may not in other moments, but in this moment, the doctor is the winner. Yeah, I can bring you back this power that you had that's going to reverse your disease. Oh, no, not in my case, because in my case, it's genetic. Okay, how do you know? My mom had it. Okay. Does that mean that your daughter will have it? Yes. And her daughter? Uh-huh. And her daughter's daughter? Yes, everybody will have it. Do you think at any point it may be possible to break the chain, to create a generation where they don't have it? Well, it may be possible with science and everything. Okay. So is it possible that a scientist will figure out how to reverse the condition so that your daughter's daughter's daughter doesn't need to have it? Yeah. So let me ask you this. If a scientist figured it out last week, hypothetically, your doctor would not know, correct? I guess. Well, what if I told you that it's been figured out? And what if I told you that not 100, but 1,000 people with the same condition as you were able to reverse it with evidence in 21 days? Would you at least want to know how, or would you choose to stay locked in to the idea that it's impossible to reverse it? This is my chess game. Guys, I'm telling you, I'm not suggesting that all of you do this. For me, it's fun right now. I really like it because I'm getting better at it. I can back them into a corner and tie them into a knot. But I've learned I don't challenge what they say. I massage it. And the most powerful words in that process are, what if? What would happen if? or knowing that I need to access their PFC, because if you say, what would happen if, the only way they can answer that question is PFC, right? What would happen if the sun didn't come up tomorrow? Well, they'd have to think about it. And then the place where they think about it, because it's a possibility, it didn't happen yet, it's not their memory, it's their PFC. What would happen if the sun came up 2 hours early tomorrow? They got to think about it. So what would happen if a scientist invented something that broke the chain of disease? They go into their PFC, which means now they have an active PFC. Good. That's what I want. What would happen if you tried a 21-day strategy, you went for your labs, and eureka, you didn't have the condition anymore and you didn't need the medication? I'd be happy. So why would you not give it a try? Let's give it a try. But I've got to get them into that space. It can't come from me pounding facts. I'm going to state my truth, and then I'm going to ask them PFC directives. And I have to tell you guys, that's what works. What would happen if, very good words, or here's another good phrase. I want you to imagine, when you say that, because that's PFC, I want you to imagine how different life would be if you had the energy you had as a teenager. They don't have to answer you, but when you say, I want you to imagine, they go into their prefrontal cortex and they create a different outcome. Now, do any of them want to keep the disease? We can argue that some of them are so attached to it as their identity. But in terms of pure desire, I don't think so. So the fact is, I'm on their side and they're on my side. I just have to help them see it. And that's the strategy. So I want you guys to realize you don't have to lie, but you don't have to get frustrated by the lies. You have to be different because you stand in truth. But your truth has to be bold. It can't be, well, yeah, I'll show up for the workouts. Well, I can't guarantee anything. You can't say things like that and expect the market to bow at your feet. You've got to stand in truth. Any thoughts, comments, questions on anything at all that I share? Because this is perspective. This is not step one, step two, step three, step four. This is perspective, but I think it's really important perspective. Because we've all been there where we get frustrated. Well, you want to do the reboot? They go, nah. Okay. I don't play that game anymore.
All right, there's Sam. Sam went in the back of the van.
Tasso?
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's okay. You threw Sam in the back of the van?
No, they were looking for, someone was looking for their bike and he had it.
I'm glad you made it. We really have great respect for you doing what you're doing right now, honestly. I mean, we've kind of heard you training for it and watched you go through a few falls. Really glad you're doing that. It's great.
Yeah.
And because it's a fundraiser, you could say something in the Alive group. Feel free.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, but Star 6, if you're going to have a mute conversation going on that needs to be muted. So, Tasso, did you just get on? You needed to mute after you answered me. Did you just get on the call?
I was muted. I didn't hear the question.
Have you been on for a while, or did you just get here?
No, I got here right after you asked everybody if they could believe what you were saying and could
okay,
see
good.
It. And Tammy said it resonated with her. I was on from there.
Okay. Did it resonate with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Good.
All right, I'm going to mute.
Okay, mute. Any thoughts on anything I said? Because some of you may think, yeah, well, I want to learn this chess game, and others may go, I don't want to work that hard. Like, seriously, I just want to train people who are motivated. And when I interview trainers and I ask them that question, who do you like to train? They go, people who are motivated. I think I have an advantage, not because I don't need them to be motivated, but I realize part of that is my responsibility. Like, let's get them motivated. Because my market opens up immensely. If I'm just training motivated people, man, that's a competitive marketplace.
Truth be told, I like to work with broken people. And that
you like what?
I like to work with people who are broken.
Yeah.
And that's probably only over the last like 8 or 9 years or something like that. Before, it was, I was very much so like, oh, you know, getting pissed off, you know, this happened, that happened, you didn't show up, you talk, you know. And
yep.
Now I welcome that. I, matter of fact, when someone shows up and says, well, I want to lose, you know, I want to get into my bikini, I want to lose weight for the summer, I kind of roll my eyes. I'm like, I don't want to work with
you. Tony, you should get the game Stratego and play it with your son.
I haven't seen Stratego in like 30 something.
Do you remember it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's great. So, you know, when we look at what's going on now with marketing, and I'm talking a lot about all the fraudulent marketing and all the bullshit marketing and all these social media gurus who are just sucking money from people, honestly, I don't think they're all intentional scams. I just think that social media marketing changed. It got oversaturated. The powers that be started running things differently, creating different algorithms and charging more money. It's not the same, but they didn't tell people that. They just go, oh, no, we'll just, you know, you give us $1,000 ad spend and, you know, we'll get your stuff out there. But it's not working like it did. It's not working like they promise. Does anybody know who the first postmaster general was in this country? Little piece of trivia if you ever ask this on Jeopardy. Benjamin Franklin, exactly right. He was the first postmaster general appointed in 1775. So does that mean mail started in 1775? No. It means the structured United States Postal Service started in 1775. But in the 1500s, 1600s, people were writing letters. Columbus was writing letters to the Queen. So letters were written and they would be delivered. It just wasn't like it is today. And along the way, the catalog was born. And the first catalog ever was in England, and it sold books because this was the only man in England who owned a printing press. So he would print books and he would sell them from a catalog. And the books that he sold were the English translation of the Bible and Aesop's Fables. That was it. And he built a business and became a millionaire back when millionaires were a rarity. But he started something. And about 200 years later, catalogs really started to catch on. And now we're in the United States, not England anymore. And companies are realizing that if they can print all of their offers and wares on paper and get that paper to people, and they can have a mechanism where people can place an order, they could do really well. And the first companies to do really well were garden and seed catalogs. Now, this makes sense. There weren't grocery stores, there weren't supermarkets, so if you wanted vegetables or pretty flowers, you had to grow them. And if somebody's going to sell you seeds, it's worth ordering them. It's not convenient. You can't go to a store and buy them, but they didn't even know there was such a possibility back then. The thought of having a grocery store. So, over time, the idea of creating a catalog caught on. And when Ben Franklin became the Postmaster General, well, now mail was a thing that everybody was able to take advantage of to some degree. And in 1860, you didn't know you're getting a history lesson today, the Pony Express was born, and that made the distribution of mail more efficient at greater distances. So at that point, direct marketing started. It wasn't just catalogs anymore. It was offers sent by mail. And the companies that did it all did well because there was no competition. People weren't going to their mailbox. They didn't even have a mailbox. It was brought to their door. And they didn't go through postcards and coupons. They got one. And they're like, oh, my God, what's this? And it was printed professionally, and they'd probably never seen that. So it worked. It worked really well. New York Life, the New York Life Insurance Company, started back then with direct mail. They started in 1872. Top producing, fastest growing insurance company as a result. That same year, Montgomery Ward started a mail order business and decided that he was going to sell in his stores retail, but he was going to sell all over the country, not by creating a catalog, but by creating a one-page mailer that made an offer that said, you can buy this coat, or you can buy this pair of shoes, or you can buy this tie, or you can buy this chair, just by sending a envelope back to me. Made a fortune. Ultimately, the Montgomery Ward catalog featured about 250 items, but that's how it started, one page. Somebody else whose name you recognize came shortly after, Sears. Sears started mailing flyers. They started by mailing flyers for watches to rural communities where there were no watch stores, there were no jewelry stores. In 1926, the Book of the Month Club started serial ordering, where you sign up for a membership and they send you something in the mail every month. All of these things worked because they were the first. They were the only. They weren't competing. So the first person who recognized the ability to reach an audience on Facebook probably did explosively well. But now, you can't. I mean, try to get a postcard in the mail to stand out. Most of my bills now are paperless. So when I go to my mailbox, most of it is just junk, postcards, real estate offers. I don't look at any of it. I look through quickly to see if there's a check, and if there isn't, I throw it away. Every once in a while, I get a check, so I still do look. Otherwise, I wouldn't even look. Now, by the 1950s, copywriting was an art because now there were lots of vehicles where people could advertise. They could place ads in print, in magazines, comic books, women's magazines, local newspapers. These were all vehicles for marketing, or what we might now call pipelines. There's a reason I'm sharing all this with you guys, not because I expect you to become direct mail historians, but we're getting to the present. In 2008, Groupon came along. And if anybody here was party to that, especially with boot camps, boot camps went from having 8 participants to having 60. That's how effective Groupon was. And all of the owners of boot camps went from struggling personal trainers to believing they really have a viable business now. And some of them made $70,000 a year, which they hadn't even smelled before. And they believed that this is it. Now they've stepped into this boot camp, and they're going to open a second boot camp, and they're going to hire somebody, and they're going to open a third boot camp. And then Groupon got saturated, and they realized it's attracting unqualified people, and the people started realizing they only want to go where they could get a Groupon. I actually have a member of my gym, and she pays, but she tells me that she goes to every free anything she sees. Like if she sees an ad for a free yoga class, she goes. She has no intention of joining. She's just like, why not? Free week at LA Fitness, she'll take it. So she's a tire kicker. And that's what was happening is these people going, let's see what we get on Groupon. Let's see what we get on Groupon. Nobody was going, let me join the boot camp. So it fizzled. Tony, were you part of that? Did you have an adventure boot camp?
I never did adventure boot camp. I did my own.
Okay.
And yes, I had a few spins for Groupon. Some of the most frustrating experiences I've ever had.
For that reason, right? They were tire kickers looking for a deal.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. My conversion rate for Groupon people was like less than 10%.
Yeah. So realize when it started, The first ones who got on board in Groupon did really well. They were converting because it hadn't been saturated yet. The market hadn't learned about Groupon, so they didn't go, oh, we could just get another Groupon and go there. We can get another Groupon and go there. So once that happens, it becomes impotent. So this is what happens is there's a market lag. Something's effective, and then everybody goes, oh, we're going to just do Groupon, and then it doesn't work. Google AdWords. That was the first kind of self-advertising where you can just do this by yourself without an agency. You didn't have to pay a newspaper. You didn't have to meet with a sales rep. Now, that grew into a multi-billion dollar system, but back when Google AdWords started, it was like self-serve advertising online. And the people who got on board in 2000, 2001, 2002, man, they started driving people to their website. But now, everyone does it because you're supposed to, but it doesn't have that same impact. In 2014, Facebook ads exploded. People started really using Facebook to get the phone to ring, to get emails, to get consultations. Not anymore. I'm telling you guys, not anymore. I'm not saying don't use Facebook. I'm just saying the idea that you just run some ads on Facebook and you make a lot of money, it's a lie. It's a lie. It might have been at one time, but that's like saying make a one-page flyer to sell watches and you'll make millions. It doesn't exist the way it did anymore. We've moved past it. And we've got to be okay with the fact that we move past things. So we move past the way medicine was. We've got to look ahead and ask ourselves, where's the opportunity? Now, the medical field, which I'm very connected with, is so fucking myopic right now. They can't see past COVID. Part of when I said it was a heated roundtable that I was on with doctors is they're arguing over Biden's speech. Some of them are going, oh, it's great. People need to wear masks. About time he took a stand. And some are going, oh, well, a small business can now get $2 million. But there's no agreement. There's polarization. He's an asshole. He's the worst thing the Democratic Party ever had. But what concerns me is they're all paying attention because they think they have to follow the administration, just like I told you, there are protocols in hospitals, to learn what their future will be. So they're going to start making money for giving people vaccines. And some of them see it as a fix. They go, well, I haven't really made money. You know, I thought I was going to make $1 million in telemarketing, but not telemarketing, telemedicine, but I hate it. I hate it. I can't do it. I don't like it. The patients annoy me. They don't want to pay. So it sounded good. They're like, oh, you could just now stay home and be a doctor. Yeah, it didn't work out that way. So now they're willing to say, well, sure, give us $40 every time we put a vaccine in somebody's arm. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll run a vaccine factory. All of these pain clinics right now, you can't tell me that any doctor who's part of a pain clinic thinks they're doing good work. They're drug dealers. They're providing opioids for people who are literally brain dead at this point. But it's what they're doing for money. So how is that different than going into the business of vaccines? Well, if you believe it's good, it's not hurting people, but is it you being a doctor? Is it you doing what you went to medical school for? So the problem with all of this is nobody's looking at chronic disease. Nobody. I'm telling you, I'm on the calls when nobody talks about it. Here's what they look at in terms of chronic disease. Chronic disease, rather than becoming a disease, is now a comorbidity. Like, oh, if you have autoimmune disease, you got to get the vaccine. Not, let's fix the autoimmune disease. Like, where's that? Well, if you have metabolic syndrome, then yeah, you need to get vaccinated quick. You need to get your booster. How about let's get rid of the metabolic syndrome? So guys, this is what I'm seeing in front of us. This is it. This is my business future right now, and yours too if you want it. But since COVID, I haven't really been able to hit a groove with a marketing message for the masses. So I've done several postcard mailings. I've done some campaigns that worked, but I haven't been able to replicate the response that I used to get, giving like the 9 days free with the 7 day reboot. I mean, that was massive response, but that was before COVID. Those things didn't work after COVID because people are polarized and they're fearful and they're not responding to the same imagery. So I send you guys the postcards that I'm sending out September 29th. I tested it. I connected with a company that I canceled my social media contract because really they're not, I could do it myself and do better in terms of return. And I partnered with a company that does direct mail. But what they do is when you buy the mailing list, they have a software system that scours Facebook to see if those names are on Facebook. So when the postcard goes out, those same people get the offer in their Facebook feed. Now, I love this idea. Honestly, it's different than just placing Facebook ads. And if they go on Facebook 3 times in a row after that postcard mailing, it's going to show up 3 times in a row. And what I most love about that is I'm paying them a flat fee. It's not an ad spend. I'm not looking at cost per thousand, cost per click. But what I wanted to do before I committed was test it. So I bought the list. And I said, let's just send out these images to the list without sending a postcard. And if it does well, then we'll do the whole ball of wax. With the postcard, I'll pay extra for call tracking. But let me see that the message works. And I send you guys the postcards. There are 3 of them. The copy is exactly the same. The images are different. The idea is rather than going, hey, come get fit, hey, come get healthy, hey, 21-day metabolic reboot, rather than that, which isn't working for the masses, I want to play the chess game. I want to get the people who are suffering, who are stuck, and they're fed up. That's who I want to get. So the postcard says, call me and tell me that you've had enough. That's what I'm looking for. So here's what's great. My staff wasn't ready, but the phone started ringing. I've had enough. I'm sorry, who is this? I've had enough. All right, I'm sorry, goodbye. Oh, man, crazy person called. Hello, I've had enough. But now, next week on Wednesday, we have a big staff training going through how to handle these. But the bottom line is, it worked. It worked. Now, what I'm doing right now is directing these people to the REMAS quiz. And I get the REMAS quiz, and then it's a laydown, honestly. But it takes work, and it is the chess game. It is the game of Stratego. And guys, believe me, if it were so easy, like if it were just, here's a Facebook ad that works, I would share with you guys. This is the frustration for all of us. You know, and we keep believing because we keep hearing that you could just run an ad on Instagram. And if you link your Instagram to your Calendly, people set appointments. I don't see it happening. I see people making the claims. I see it happening for Bitcoin. But I don't see it happening for personal trainers. I see coaches selling personal trainers how to make millions on YouTube. There's a guy, I think his name is Brian Barstick or Barstwick or something. He's a reptile guy in the Midwest, and he's a snake breeder. And he's been in business for probably 25 years. And he's a personality. And today he has like cobras and all venomous snakes and rattlesnakes and he's got a sloth and he's got alligators. So he makes these great videos on YouTube and he's now being paid. You know, he makes, once you reach a certain point on YouTube, you can make money and you can sell sponsorships. He's making a lot of money on YouTube. So what's interesting to me is I see these people going, yeah, you could make $1 million on YouTube like he did. He didn't make $1 million on YouTube. He started with two snakes and got eggs and bred babies and went to the reptile shows for years. I mean, 25 years. But now he's able to use this pipeline. But the illusion is you could do it. You just got to get a YouTube channel. Nobody's going to watch your YouTube channel. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying it comes down to everything I keep telling you. Know your avatar and hit him with the right message. So my avatar right now is somebody who's fearful at home in pain. Those are the bullet points on the postcards. Weight loss resistance, joint pain, thyroid issues, blood sugar concerns. I'm testing three different postcards to see which image pulls the best. The copy is exactly the same. It's time. Get better. That's the hook. Like, enough's enough. You should be fed up. You've been given pills. You've been given potions. You've been made promises. The bottom line is you're not any better. You're taking your pills and you still have diabetes. Enough is enough. It's time for you to get better. So what do? You give me 45 minutes and I will change your life. You give me 45 minutes and I will show you a better future. Now, guys, you know, because I gave you all the background, what this is. This is PFC. Give me 45 minutes and I'll show you a better future. That means I have 45 minutes to talk to their prefrontal cortex. I'm excited about this campaign. Now, we are updating the website so that it flows directly to the REMAS quiz. So if people get the postcard and go to the website, they will then be taken to the REMAS quiz, and then I get all kinds of information about them, which is great. And if they call, they're just going to tell me that enough is enough. They've had enough. And then we invite them in for an experience. And by next week, the staff will be trained. So when somebody goes, enough is enough, they're going to go, fantastic. What time of day is best for you to come in for your experience? Now, as always, I'll let you know the outcome, but we tested this and the test was effective. That's without the direct mail postcard. If you want to know, all in, I'm spending $5,600 with everything, and I didn't commit to that initially. I gave them an $800 deposit if they would do the online test. So when this works for me, I'm not asking you guys to spend that, but I'm saying then you know the messaging works. You could print up postcards and distribute them locally. Give them to people you know. You could put the imagery on your website. You could do some social media ads. You don't have to spend the money I'm spending. I did it because I want a real test. I want to put something out there and see if it generates. Any thoughts, comments, questions on any of that? And by the way, I'm available. I'll share anything with you guys. What I find is working really, really well right now is speaking to the pain point and getting the information. So anything that is a tool in that helps me, and that's why the REMAS quiz has been great for me. Right now I'm getting 3 or 4 a day. They score between 0 and 100. Most are in the high 50s. So it's an easy conversation. I go, well, I got good news. You have REMAS. And they go, what do you mean? I go, well, let me explain it. Your endocrine system is driving this condition where you have weight loss resistance. And I noticed that you said you have brain fog and you're taking medication for diabetes. It's all part of this endocrine maladaptation syndrome. Are you under a fair amount of stress? And they always go, oh, yeah. I go, well, that's what's initiating this whole thing. And the bottom line is we can absolutely reverse it. Would you be interested in coming in to talk about how? How much is it? How much is what? Me to come in? 0. Okay. And now I have 45 minutes to speak to their PFC. But keep in mind, this isn't something I've been doing this way for years. This is the dance. This is the chess match. This is the adaptation. The environment changed. Medicine changed. The world changed. Public perception changed. So I'm changing my approach. And I'm sharing it with you guys in real time. So if you decide to come along with me, the door's open. If you reject and go, well, it's not my way, that's okay too. But still, I'm just sharing truth.
Hey, Phil, are you going to give us a link that we can use to send them to do the remaster?
Yeah, I sent it to you before, but I'll send it again. Sure, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if that was the one because you said you were updating it. So, okay, I got it.
Yeah,
it's in my
email. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'll send it again just to make sure. Now, Heather, you've identified your avatar, your ICA, right? And you actually went through the UI exercise. Now, I don't think that it is violating any confidence if I mention that you also went through the TRUE program, and this was an exercise in that. So this wasn't just, you know, Phil made a suggestion, you went and did it. But you did it. Am I right? Is Heather not here? Okay, then I'm going to save this for next time because I wanted to go over what she submitted, but it's important that I have her in the conversation. So you guys saw it, but she's done a really nice job, and now she just has to follow through. I encourage you guys to do the same thing. Any thoughts, comments, questions about anything, anything in the universe except ivermectin? I will talk about anything except I've had my fill of ivermectin.
So about the ivermectin, you know, I'm in a quandary about this whole thing because my goddaughter is actually, she's not 30 yet. She's 29. And she's about a week and a half away from getting her thyroid removed.
Oh.
And, you know, we've been going, you know, talking about this back and forth, and my hands are really tied because she's had some issues with her thyroid before, and she's like not overweight. She's that she was a you know, a track star, and she just had her second baby, and it seems like with, as the babies are coming, she's been having more and more challenges with the thyroid. And so when I was talking, she mentioned it to me because she's not freaking out about it, but she is talking to me about it, and. And I don't know if they found cancerous cells on thyroid or not, but it's like, you know, like I said, she's about a week and a half away from the surgery about being removed. And look, I'm not looking for answers, but it's just a troubling situation for me, especially having, you know, that you were just talking about it.
Troy, are you still here?
Yes.
So, Troy, you have a pancreas that doesn't function normally, right?
Correct.
So the fix for you is you inject the hormone that the pancreas is falling short on, and you live a very good life, right?
Correct.
So, Tony, it's very similar because the thyroid is a gland like the pancreas. So if somebody has type 2 diabetes, we can reverse it because it is self-induced. In a case like Troy, it's not self-induced. He has a pathology of the pancreas, right?
Right.
So I can't speak to why they are removing her thyroid, but your suspicion is quite likely because usually when they do that, it's because there's an indication that there's some malignancy.
Right.
There are a couple of ways they could do it. They could remove the entire thyroid or they could remove a part of it.
They're removing the entire thyroid.
Okay. So, like any surgery, it's risky because it's surgery. However, she can live a very normal life without any disruption. She's just going to need to take what the thyroid would produce. So for the rest of her life, she will take T3 and T4. And that's it. So when I talk about hypothyroid conditions, it's self-induced hypothyroid conditions based on adrenal stress and poor diet. It doesn't sound like that's what her issue is, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in a case like that, and if you want to find out more, you can, but I think you, if she's got a good surgeon and she's got good doctors guiding her, if that's the right thing to do, far be it from me to get in the way of that. But that's the thing is, does she have good doctors and is she getting good advice? The old idea of a second opinion is never a bad idea. But if she's come this far, my guess is this is not a new, this is not a sudden diagnosis, right?
No, it doesn't seem like it. Yeah, she means, because also she's diabetic. And if you look at her, she's like a very fit looking, even after the second baby, beautiful young woman. And if you look at her, you say, like, oh, you're an athlete. You know, you were an athlete at one period of time. But she has all these, you know, these complications, which is just like, you know. And it's interesting because, you know, when it's someone in your family you know, love, and care about, and this whole thing happens, it's a very different experience than the client walking in. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's also really important that she 1,000% knows what she's in for. So here's something that I see commonly. People get their gallbladder removed, and the doctor, that's no big deal. You don't need a gallbladder. They get their gallbladder removed. But they can't digest and process fat the same, and nobody tells them that. So I've seen that often. I'm just amazed how little information. I remember when I was in the hospital, my roommate had just been diagnosed with diabetes, and a woman came in to teach him how to give himself insulin, and he didn't understand what the whole thing was. He was like listening as if she's like a mechanic teaching him to fix an engine, but he didn't understand. I sat down for hours and helped him understand what's going on with his body. So I'm sure she's very intelligent, but I would just make sure before she has a surgery that she knows what the protocol is, what she's going to have to be on, whether she's going to need to get injections or take pills, you know, just find out everything so it's not a radical disruption to her life. But you could live a very, very long and healthy life without a thyroid if you replace the hormones that your thyroid would make.
Right.
But I'm sorry to hear that, and I'm hoping for the best outcome.
Well, thank you for that, because it gives me a little bit more of an idea of what to talk to her about, because I was going to share with her what I know, but this definitely helps.
Yeah, and just here's the line that's important that you don't cross. When somebody goes through a maladaptation process, so meaning they start out in health, and then a little at a time, things get out of whack. So they go into adrenal overload, and then their insulin receptors shut down. It's a process. So this is always self-induced. It's because of stress, their inability to manage or mitigate stress. They're eating poorly. They're not exercising. They're stressing out. They're not getting enough sleep. In those cases, a hypothyroid condition or a blood sugar condition is almost always reversible.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is a pathology of an organ, a gland, or a system, we have no ability to make that kind of promise. That's when it becomes medical.
Right.
So, just because somebody has a thyroid issue doesn't mean we can reverse it. But if they have a hypothyroid condition as a result of REMAS, we quite likely can.
Right, and I acknowledge that, and that's one of the reasons why I have been like, I've been doing more listening than anything. I haven't. You know, tread on that ground at all, you know, because I do get that, and I know that it's really easy to, you know, overstep the boundaries there. So I haven't done that.
All right.
Thank you.
Wish her the best.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thoughts, comments, questions about anything? Tony, how's New York holding up?
So fun. New York is a trip. You know, it's funny because I have a couple of clients who are like police officers, and you know, they'll make you believe that New York is back in 1986. But there's been a big campaign I've noticed in the media about New York coming back. So I mean, you can't help but recognize that there's an issue. Now, this is all I'm hearing hearsay. I've just been so focused on what I'm doing. I've been going to like 3 or 4 places, and that's it. So I don't see anything.
Yeah. Back in 1986, meaning what? Meaning like homeless people in the streets?
Yep, definitely that. I saw when I think I told you when the Knicks went to the playoffs, at the first playoff game in New York City since I don't know how long. And I went, and I was amazed to see
how many homeless people that there were in the city, because we hadn't seen that in such a long time, you know. And yeah. I was there with my friends, so I didn't feel any, you know, any threat at all. But the first thing I said to him was like, I would never come out here, my wife and my son. There's no freaking way. And this was Sunday night, Madison Square Garden, beginning of the summer, you know, right after, you know, the Knicks played. So it was like really, really populated. I have no idea what this would be like, you know, on a weeknight after, you know, Broadway shows let out. I mean, because we can get really desolate on the west side over there. And I'm like, nah, I wouldn't do it. I can do without for now.
Hmm. I have a friend who is a architect and does very well. And he has a beautiful apartment on the Upper East Side. And he built a house in Woodstock, upstate. And he tells me he's not going back to the city. He says every time he goes back there, he hates it. Like, he's a New York guy, you know, loves, loves, loves New York. But he says every time I go there, I'm reminded of how broken it is. So he says, you know, yeah. Homeless, broken windows, places boarded up, like it's just not the same.
Yep, it is. That I saw.
Yeah. I'm hoping the turnaround happens quick, honestly. I miss going up there. I miss taking my daughter there. All right, guys, I hope today had impact, because what I'm sharing with you is really important. It's know your center. Be in control of your own orbit. Don't let other people's energy affect you, and be a leader in that regard. And don't expect people to just go, oh, yeah, you can cure my condition? Okay, great, I'll pay you. Play the game. Be willing to kind of play chess. Get in there. Talk to their prefrontal cortex, and you're going to get a lot of victories. And everyone feels emotionally good. And also financially good. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.